back on Downtown Friday afternoon. Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here. It's a song for defectors there. And up next with us to talk about defection, or at least defector, it's our friend, writer David Roth. Hello, David.
Hey, man. How are you? That's a very tasteful music choice. I appreciate it.
Try to put some thought into it here if we can. So we want to talk about this brand new website, Defector. And I'm a bit confused because I thought you had to be a dim-witted trust fund D-bag to be a media mogul.
Yeah, I'm out here trying to prove that you can actually be just kind of like a weird dude with a mood disorder and not a lot of money in the bank. And we'll see if it works.
It's fantastic. I like that trend. That gives me hope.
I'm going to get some sort of fleece over garment and see if that apparently helps.
Oh, yeah, but it's got to be a vest.
Yeah, I got to get a vest. I might start wearing a black turtleneck every day. I don't know. I'm going to try different things. I'm going to play with my look.
Well, this is exciting news. Tell us what you can about the website and when it will all roll out and how people can get some great content.
Yeah, so everybody that I worked with at Deadspin quit on the same day, which was Halloween of last year. And we've been working since then trying to figure out a way to start up a new thing of our own that we would own and that we would sort of have, the real say-so that we have traditionally been denied at other places. And turns out that's actually very difficult to do, but we are really close. We launched it on Tuesday. 10,000 people subscribed in the first 24 hours, which was far more than I had allowed myself to dream about. And so the idea now is basically, the site itself is still being built, but we are squaring away the parts of it that, we don't know that much about in terms of the business and the, the design element and stuff. And everybody's kind of, we're working with some really very good and very helpful people that wanted to succeed in that regard. And then, we're getting ready to do our blogs again. I got my podcast with Drew McGarry starting back up on August 13th, which is great. And that's free. You don't need to subscribe for that. And then the site itself, we're going to launch right after Labor Day. Right after I get back from Maine, actually. So it's going to be kind of a working vacation for me.
That's fantastic. Well, it's such exciting news, and you've got such a great group of people. We look forward to seeing it all. Let's talk about some of the things that are going on right now. Major League Baseball seems to be going well. Only 20% of their teams have been shut down.
Which is great. I mean, you got to expect that over the course of a season, 20% of your teams are going to wind up being decommissioned and forced into quarantine. That's normal. Is this the first time since we talked that there's actually sports to talk about?
I think it is, yes.
Yeah, it's kind of nice, actually. I've been watching baseball and feeling not guilty about it, but not great either. I think it's just that the quality of play has been really bad. I mean, beyond the hideousness of the whole the Marlins thing and the outbreak and how badly it's being managed. The baseball is very early March, and it's a six and that's been, it's one thing to watch that during spring training, if you're enough of a sicko, as I am, to watch that and, pretend that you're scouting AA relievers. And, you can have fun with it in that regard. In this case, these games ostensibly count, and Jeff McNeil, the thing he's playing with roller skates on, it's just been very difficult to watch.
I've been watching the Mets because the Red Sox have been playing them the last 4 days,
yeah,
and
sorry,
so I feel some of your pain.
Yeah, it's, some of it is normal Mets, and I think that I don't have the calluses built up that I ordinarily do. Watching a bullpen meltdown in July, that's normal to me. That's stubbing your toe or whatever. I know you hop around for a little bit and you say two curse words and then you keep it moving. I had, I didn't have the sort of the ramping up period of getting ready for it in the same way that players, the Mets relievers needed repetition so that they would be able to properly blow winnable games in the eighth and ninth innings. I myself emotionally need the same version of that. I need to watch them do it in less meaningful games in colder weather. So I've been a bit caught out by that one. But yeah, I mean, I was so much happier in some ways to see the NBA games because those actually look like basketball. The baseball games that I've seen, I mean, some of it's the Mets. Some of it, honestly, is the Red Sox, too. The teams just don't look ready.
No, there were, and I follow baseball pretty closely. There were back-to-back Red Sox games where I literally had never heard of the starting pitchers.
Oh my gosh, yeah, Joss Osich.
Yeah.
And
Matt Hall. Yeah. Who the hell is Matt Hall?
That was a new one on me too. And a lot of those guys too, the Mets will bring guys like that in over the course of the year, but when you hear the announcers talking them up and they're like, well, he was not effective with the Tigers last year and was released, and you're like, oh, the Tigers lost like 113 games last year. Is that good? How did this happen?
Now,
the Sox especially, man, if that lineup is still so good and the pitching is just bizarre.
Yeah. I will say, though, the Nesson crew that broadcast the Red Sox games, because they're doing it all remotely, and they've got Dennis Eckersley and Jerry Remy together, and they are phenomenal. And I think the only other crew in the game that's better is the one you get to see on a regular basis with the Mets.
Yeah, the Mets team is great. I love the Red Sox broadcast team, too. I mean, that's one of the, like, favorites of being up in New England during the summer whenever I can do it. Remy's great, and I hope he lives for 100 more years and continues to do Red Sox games the duration of that. The Mets, it's been weird. I mean, in some ways, Remy is similar to this, that Keith Hernandez is one of the, you know, sort of the two color commentators for the Mets. And he's exceptionally distractible under the best of circumstances, and these are not those. And so he hasn't been on any real crazy stemwinder digressions yet, but I'm still waiting for the first one of those. I vividly remember a few years ago him just, it wasn't a short version of a recipe. He had grilled a lamb recently and had a good experience and gave the entire recipe on air during a, you know, an otherwise meaningless July game. But he was like, you got to get the mustard with the seed. You can't get the other type of mustard. And like, action is happening in the game. And he was just kind of, you know, being like, sear it on both sides. Of course, you want to move it to the less hot side of the grill. Really just wonderful performance art stuff.
That is fantastic. We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. Yeah, the NBA finally got it going last night. A couple of good games. The LA battle was very good last night. And it seems like they've got a shot to make this work as long as guys can avoid their penchant for strip club wings.
Yeah, I know. Well, I love Lou Williams forever. And, like, honestly, like, when he says that that's his favorite place to eat, like, it's Lou Williams. If you're familiar with his work, it probably really is. That's fine. You know, but as long as nobody's getting anybody else sick, it really does seem like the bubble thing is the only way that it could even be made to work. And I, you know, I don't feel great about, like, imposing that quality of life restriction. The idea of you just, like, live in a hotel and go to work every day sounds exceedingly grim. But the basketball itself looked good, and if people aren't getting sick, like, that is a real boon. Like, being able to watch, like, live-action Anthony Davis basketball, let alone, like, how spectacularly good LeBron was last night. Like, I, you know, I did miss that. And the role that, like, basketball plays in, like, my feeling normal to the extent that I'm capable of doing it, I don't think I'd really unpacked what it was until it was absent. And, you know, it'd be, like, times at night, and you know, my wife would go to bed, I wouldn't be tired yet. And, like, without that, like, random Nuggets Jazz game to watch, like, I was adrift.
Well, you know, what I find is I'm that way. I think about baseball, too. It's, I don't even have to be watching closely. It's that it's there, and I can light on it and be doing something else while it's in the background. And, you know, if I, well, I won't hear the crowd noise now, but if I hear something exciting, I check out what it is. But you sort of took it for granted as being the backdrop of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just like a summer kind of ambient thing. I had a friend who I was just talking to, told me the same thing, watching a Giants game for the first time in a while. He grew up in that area. And, you know, you watch, like, attentively for, like, three or four outs. And I was like, these guys aren't very good, are they? And then, you know, just, like, turned the volume up and went to go do dishes and was like, oh, this is it. This is what I was missing. Like, I didn't need to very closely watch, like, Yastrzemski or whatever. Like, I needed to be faintly aware from another room that he was batting.
Now, I know you're not a big hockey guy, but I'm also pretty excited for the hockey playoffs, a good Bruins team this year, and they may be in the best position at all because they just got the hell out of America.
Yeah. I mean, that is really one of those things where, like, if someone told it to you as, like, a joke a few years ago, you'd be like, well, first of all, it's not very funny, and second of all, I think that's a little unfair. And now you're like, it is 100% true that it's like, oh, well, at least they're in Canada, so thank goodness my boys are. It's really bizarre. It does seem like, yeah, the NHL does have that sort of figured out. You know, and to the extent that, like, it can be figured out, it really does seem like that's what it takes. I mean, that's the part that, that makes me nervous about MLB and NFL, you know, approaches to this, is that they seem to be just ignoring the realities of how to do it. Whereas, you know, a little bit of actually responding to circumstances on the ground goes a long way when it comes to managing this stuff.
Well, and college football is also in an interesting situation. Most of the Northeast, where the virus is pretty well controlled, has canceled college football. But in the South and West, where it's spinning wildly out of control, game on.
Yeah, I mean, some of these things, again, like, they're so on the nose that they don't even really qualify as, like, satirical or funny. You're just kind of like, oh, right, Tennessee. That's how they are. But it is weird. I mean, college football, too, and especially with college sports, like, it's not an argument that I like making, but if you want to say that, like, professional athletes are getting paid very well to do this stuff, and that they are, you know, they're adults and they're taking this risk and they're getting compensated for it, then, like, who's to stop them? I think asking college athletes to, you know, like, in football, like, to be right in someone's face, just breathing and doing violence to them. Like, I wouldn't want a college to have, like, open classroom instruction in a state like, you know, Mississippi or Louisiana right now, let alone that. And the fact that they're doing it and they're not getting paid is just, like, I can't think about it too long. It makes me, honestly, makes me pretty angry.
All right, we don't want your blood pressure to go up, but I have to ask about a couple of things from the world of politics, and it's this. There are so many candidates for dumbest...
This will help calm me down, yeah.
I know. There are so many candidates for dumbest person in Congress. Jim Jordan certainly comes to mind, Marsha Blackburn, but to me, old Texan Louie Gohmert is the absolute perfect representation of the Trump era.
I was hoping that you were going to say Louis. I love him. I love his work. And
the subtle stylings of Louie Gohmert.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of stuff that, like, it's like with Steely Dan, you know, unless you've really, like, paid attention to the changes in time signatures and stuff, you're just not getting it all. with Louis, Louie Gohmert did manage to contract COVID, which, you know, of course, is no laughing matter and whatever. At the same time, like, he couldn't have been trying any harder to get it than he was. It's really, like, in the same way that, like, Jair Bolsonaro seems to contract it every 3 days regardless. He's, like, responsible for 10% of the world's cases, just like him and people that hang out near him. Gohmert, the thing that, like, to me blew me away about that was not, it's not him getting sick because he refuses to wear a mask. It's not him then doing an interview where he speculates that wearing a mask is what caused him to get it. Like, all of that is obviously insanely bad, and I don't want to say that it's not, but that's just Louie being Louie. There was a response to it, though. People that worked in his office reached out to Politico, I guess.
Yeah.
And anonymously were sort of like, this is not surprising to us because he's making us come in every day and, like, refuses to allow us to wear masks and says that we're a model for how to reopen safely, and now we're all concerned that we got sick, too. And that, I think, really brought home, like, what we're dealing with here, which is not just, like, a, you know, one congressperson with some severe deficits out of many, but, like, a terrible boss. Somebody that, like, you could actually, if you've ever worked, like, you know that you have, like, been under the thumb of someone like Louie Gohmert. And it makes him, I don't know, it really fills out the picture of, like, what kind of dude this actually is. Not just a guy with, like, bad opinions, but a guy who, like, would run a car dealership unethically.
Yeah. And speaking of bad opinions and constantly lowering the bar, as much as I despise a lot of these Republicans, I don't know that I despise anyone more than Tucker Carlson. And part of it's because I don't think he believes a word of what he's saying.
This is a really interesting question, right? Because he has absolutely, like, done a hammer turn to the right over the last few years. I mean, he was always the conservative half of those little play fights that CNN would put on, you know, where it'd be like him and Paul Begala doing point of order arguments with each other. I don't know if he was faking then or if he's faking now, but it really has been strange to see, like, the sort of overt trolling white supremacy stuff that you see online, seeing that on TV every night really does not feel great.
No,
and he's smarter than most of the peers that he has. I mean, he's just, it's not smarter in a way that, like, makes him a better person, but he is, like, he's better at making an argument than, like, a senescent Lou Dobbs, you know?
Right, and that's, so, and that's what makes it frustrating. Like, I just think Hannity. He's dumb. He buys into the whole thing, but clearly Carlson understands, and this is what makes him, I think, more frightening. He understands how to manipulate an audience.
Yeah, and I think that's what sort of makes it, I mean, it makes it threatening, but it also is kind of like a reminder of the limits of, like, this type of, like, Trumpy grievance politics. Because someone accurately, I think, described Carlson online the other day as a white rights activist. Like, somebody who basically is, his entire racial consciousness, which is, like, the thing that defines all of his politics, is just basically about, like, complaining that there isn't, like, a White History Month in different ways. And that's, like, it's very limiting. Even if you are a fairly gifted communicator, which he is, at some point all you're doing is going on TV every day and either acting really upset or legitimately being really upset about some outrage that you likely won't remember in 3 days.
That says it all right there. All right, what's the best story out there right now? It could be from the world of sports, entertainment. What is it that brings you joy and makes you happy lately?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, for me, it really has been watching NBA basketball. And there's a certain, because the games are during the day now, it is giving me access to a forbidden treat that I was denied this year along with everyone else, which is the first 2 days of the NCAA tournament when basketball basically can run the entire time that you're awake. And so having an NBA game that starts tomorrow, there's one that starts at 1. Today there's one that started at 2:30. If you are, let's say, underemployed, as I am and as many people are, like, what an incredible gift to get some, like, Ja Morant in the middle of your afternoon.
That is great. Looking forward to more of that and looking forward to Defector.com that rolls out in September. When's the next podcast?
The next one, the first of the, it's called The Distraction, the podcast I'm doing with Drew. That is August 13th, so that is real. We're going to be recording it soon.
Fantastic.
I could not be more excited.
Well, we'll look forward to that. We'll give people instructions of how to go online and sign up, and we'll see if we can get you back on right before the launch if you're not too crazy.
It would be my honor, as always. But, yeah, thank you, man. Thanks for your support a lot.
You better believe it. David Roth, thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, man, you too. Bye.